Dr. Amalia Gonyas-Malka. Welcome to Womanity, Woman in Unity, the show that celebrates prominent and ordinary African women's milestone achievements in their struggles for liberation, self-emancipation, human rights, democracy, racism, socioeconomic class division, and gender-based violence. In today's program, we reflect on episodes of the past year and bring you a compilation of some of the show's most memorable segments, starting with Sophie Ndaba, who is an actress, businesswoman, and philanthropist. She epitomizes hard work in her rise from living in an orphanage to fulfilling her dreams, guided by the belief that faith is the substance of things not seen yet hoped for.
Whatever foundation you come from, you need to find the good in that bad. For instance, I grew up in an orphanage. Why was I there? Oh no, I was there because I wasn't there because I was an orphan. I was there because that was the only way I could go to school. You know, whereas 99.9% of the kids who are in orphanages don't have parents. So imagine being a child who's got a mother in a home with kids who don't have parents, crying every night. You were there crying for your own mother, but you know you're going to see her Christmas time. And I was in a foreign country. I was in Zimbabwe. So here I was thinking, okay, God. And that's where my relationship with God started, because I understood that in order to be that woman that stands out, in order to be different, in order to continually rise after falling every time you fall, you have that special connection with God. A lot of people are, you know, either spiritual or not. And I thought that if I have a personal relationship with God, I'm going to be able to have someone that I talk to other than a normal human being in my own little space, in my own little corner. And when I was growing up, all I learned was faith is the substance of things not seen yet hoped for. And that's what I used growing up, in understanding that if I have faith and believe in what I'm doing, I don't see it, I can't see it, I can't touch it, it's not tangible, but if I believe in it, let me test it and let me see. You know, so I use that, and that's what allowed me to become what I am today, because I looked at the orphanage. What was the good in the orphanage? The good is that I found my relationship with God, because I used to go to church every Sunday. There was nowhere else to go. So I was then, you know, introduced to God, interestingly so. And then after that, I then went, after finishing my primary school, high school, I then lived with families who said, no, let's take her in. She can't be living in an orphanage while she's got relatives around. And they took me in. Those were my foster homes with foster parents. And there was another foster parent that I lived with in another town called Bulawayo in Zimbabwe. And she used to say, oh no, kids don't wash in hot water. Oh no, kids don't eat this. Kids don't do that. And I was a young child, so I never really understood, and it really didn't bother me. And it's only when I was old, I thought, wow, that woman, she actually taught me to be a stronger person. And in understanding rules, that this is not for you, but this is for you. This is not for you, but this is for you. So that was lesson number two. The first lesson was understanding who God is, having a relationship. The second one was understanding what rules are and following them and learning to follow them. And the third one was living with this family that took me in as a second foster family, who ran 5 different businesses. It was a butchery, it was a flower shop, it was a supermarket. They had all the businesses you could think of in your head, they had them. And they said, we've got kids the same age as you. I was probably 14, 15. If you work for your school fees, you can live with us. And I said, no problem. They taught me business. So I know what happens in a butchery. If you ask me any part of the cow's body or lamb body, I'll tell you this is the hind quarter, this is the leg quarter, because I learned that as a child. And florist, you know, I worked there. So I swapped. This Saturday I'd work at this shop, that Saturday I'd work there, and I'd choose where I want to work, and I'd learn everything. And by the time that was done, I'm a wedding planner for the past 15 years. You know, I didn't work in a spaza shop. I worked in huge supermarket chains and huge, you know, butcheries and et cetera, et cetera. And that's what allowed me. And I lived in these big houses, these big mansions that never belonged to me, but I was just a Cinderella in that house. And I looked at it and I thought, okay, if people can live like this and I believe in this faith principle, it simply means I can have a mansion of my own. Hence, when I then got out of wherever I got out of, and I started working and I started achieving and I started losing some and gaining some and losing some and getting down and up, I still achieved every dream that I had. I wanted a mansion, I have a mansion. I wanted another second home, I have a second home. I wanted a holiday home, I have a holiday home. I wanted more than one car, I've got more than one car. I want to go on holiday to Paris, I can do it anytime. And you don't have to be a celebrity to achieve that. You just need to work hard, believe in yourself. Whenever you fall down, get up.
And now South Africa's queen of gospel, Rebecca Morope, tells us how fear fuels her drive to succeed. in your opinion, what have been the key drivers to your success?
It's being afraid to go back to my past. It's being afraid to not have a home to sleep. It's being afraid to go back and sleep under the bridge. It's being afraid. I didn't want to go back there. I didn't want my family to go through that as well. Or even if God blesses me with kids and stuff, I didn't want them to experience that. So that fear pushed me to be successful, pushed me to achieve even more, pushed me to be, if I've got a car, I need to pay my installment off. If I've got a bond, my house, I need to pay it off. If I've got, pushed me not to love material things, pushed me not to love things that are in the world. That fear made me to want to achieve and secure my achievement for as long as I live. That is why I had to save and buy properties and make sure that each and every property that I have, it's paid off. Fear makes you work harder and want to achieve more and want to safeguard all your achievement. You don't want to lose your house and go back to the street. You don't want to lose your car and go back to the taxi rank. You don't want to lose your t-shirt. You don't want to lose your shoe. Fear makes you want to work harder and harder and harder and listen to good advices, not negative advices, and make you don't want to mix with wrong friends. You want to mix with positive people, successful people that can push your limits as well, and for you to be successful as well,
pushing you in the right direction,
and in the right direction way. Because once you get in the in our industry, once you get that little money, you find you get a lot of friends, negative friends, good and negative, but most of the time you find negative friends, you know. So it made me not to want those friends. My friend is me, my children, my family. Those are my friends, but not even a family man. If you're negative, I get rid of you because I don't want to be in that situation. So fear made me even more stronger that I don't want to lose anything.
And I have to say that you've already elaborated on many of your experiences that you encountered, but what I found was so inspiring when I was preparing for the show and reading about your life's journey. Mm. How you began as a little girl in a rural township called Lekazi near the Kruger National Park. Mm. But when you did go to school, you went on an empty stomach without shoes.
Without shoes. Without uniform.
That you didn't finish school.
I didn't say, we used to call, I ended at grade four, it's standard two. That time. Is it standard two? But what could I do? Because I didn't have books. I had to steal money from, you know, I had a teacher that always gave me some sweets to sell at school. And then she will leave that money with me, you know, the 5 cents, 10 cents, and then she will take that money every Fridays. And when I go home, there's no bread. There's no food at all. And I'm hungry. I don't even have exercises, books to write on at school. Then I will take still from that money and buy some exercise books, maybe two, and buy bread. And I know maybe I will cover it when I sell more sweets and stuff and stuff. At the end of the day, that money will be gone because I use it at home as well. I can't keep money while my stomach is empty. You know, and then that day, the teacher wanted her money so bad. Like, Malope, you bring my money back. I'm sorry, ma'am. I left it at home. Okay, you bring it tomorrow. Okay, ma'am. Tomorrow I come. There's no money. Malope, I want my money back. Okay, ma'am, I'll bring it. If you don't bring it tomorrow, you'll see what I will do to you. Since then, I never went back to school. Until today.
We'll take a short break. Hi, I'm Zonke Dikana, a South African Afro-soul musician, songwriter and producer. You are listening to Womanity, Women in Unity on Channel Africa, the voice of the African Renaissance.
You are listening to Womanity, Woman in Unity on Channel Africa, the voice of the African Renaissance on frequency 9625 kHz on the 31 meter band. Also available on DSTV channel 902. We would love to receive your comments on Twitter at Womanity Talk. In today's program, we reflect on episodes of the past year with extracts of some of the most memorable shows. Starting the next segment is South Africa's Minister of Basic Education, Angie Moshekwa, who recalls the strong influence of her mother on her upbringing, particularly in education.
I think what saved me growing up in the township is my mother. Extremely impossible. At some stage, we used to whisper to say, are you sure that this is our mother? And I now understand now why she closed us in, didn't want us to be part of your party, your township, and always threatened us to say, if you fall pregnant, don't even tell me, disappear, because you will not see the next day. And I really believed her threats, that I won't see the next day. So I was this reading child, there were books, and there was this really threatening mother who threatened me with my life to say, you dead. And we believed her. Because she really, really used to beat us up, and we knew she meant it. If she said, I won't see you tomorrow. At some stage, I went to a clinic after a heart beating. So I knew when she says, don't even, let me not know because you won't see tomorrow. And that helped me. I mean, she really saved me in many instances because in the township schools, I remember the high school we went to every day when I come back from home, I'll be telling them stories about how we're playing games around the teacher. And just took her one day to say to the teacher, I'm out of here, I'm taking my kid, and she took me to a Catholic school.
Because
from the middle. Yeah, she just saw that this is the game she went to. But she used to fight the teacher every day, and I just used to be so angry with her to say, everybody's child, no one comes here, the only one who comes here and shouted my teacher. And just told me that you're leaving the school, you're going to that school.
So she was very engaged and very active in your upbringing.
Exactly.
And education in particular.
And very, as I say, just this very difficult woman. So, unfortunately, I went to standard six, I got distinction. And the entire class of the grade I was with, even kids who were brighter than me, failed all of them. Because at the time, standard six was an external exam. When I went to high school again, I started playing. Then I had to be removed from 1A to B. Then she went to the school. I said, I brought you an A. I'm not going to have a B in your hands. You should have told me if anything was going wrong. So find a desk. She's going to sit in the A class because I brought you an A student. So in terms of my own life, she really shaped it by this dress she kept over her head for the rest of our lives, and it was just terrified of her. So it saved me, it forced me to read and be, because after I was in A, then I had to compete with bright students. So because she forced that I become an A student, I was able to get a place in form 4, form 5, which helped me to go to university, helped me to get a bursary, because my father was not that rich and was too proud to have family paid for things. So she helped me in a way. My mother used to tell me that your education, your certificate is your husband. It's difficult out there if you're a woman. If you don't have a certificate, just as naked as anything. So if just get married first to education, then you can see the rest.
Next, Judith Sapuma shares the inspiration behind her songs and the evolution of her music, singing a few bars from her recent album.
Oh, wow. What influences my songwriting is life. You know, we go through so many things in life, good and bad and exciting and challenging. All of that for me, when I look at it, I mean, and it happens from people that are close to me, people that are far from me. I can see something on the news or maybe a situation or anything. Nature inspires me. So every song of mine tells a story. It has to tell a story because I believe that we, with our lives, we are telling a story. We are writing a book for someone else to come and read. And that book better be filled with good story. Each page must be filled with something good for someone to take something from. So if I lived a life that was really boring and it's not inspiring for someone else, I would say, let me restart and do it again. But I'm living a very, very inspiring life right now. And I've decided that traveling the world in the past year has kind of like made me want to explore other styles of music without having to change my identity or who I am or alienating people from my style of music. So I incorporated what I do with Congolese sound and a Portuguese sound, and I cannot wait for people to hear it. And that collaboration came, it's between me and a young man that has written the song for me. The song talks about, it's just a greeting that they do in Congo. It's called Mbote.
Can you share a couple of lines with us?
Oh my goodness, today?
I can't sing today, my vocal cords are in the fridge at all. And we had load shedding yesterday, so they're not doing so well.
No, it just sounds so interesting. Your sound, yeah. Congolese, yeah. Portuguese.
Okay, so it is that song. That song is called Mbote. It's written by a friend of mine. His name is Mapumba. He's also an artist in his own right. And another one called Belinda. Belinda is written by a young man. His name is Bebe. Bebe Lueki. And I just found him actually by, I was sitting in a restaurant and he came and he performed with a guitar. And I said, oh my goodness, I love the sound. And we exchanged numbers and then started talking. And I said to him, listen, I need a song. This is what I'm doing. I need a song. And he brought me like four or five songs. And we chose one from those four or five songs. And the name of the song is called Belinda. Now, those two songs, I cannot wait. Like I said, for Belinda.
You're building up excitement here.
I am. And Belinda, what does Belinda goes like, Belinda, 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 Sheria Motote, Mama, Mama, Yamotema, Ozawanga, Ozawanga, Yalivela, Tindelanga, Atamwa, Foto, Nakalisayo, Nalelate. So that's part of Belinda, but it's so beautiful when you hear it with the music, you know.
Well, and thank you for sharing. A mini preview.
Definitely a mini preview. And, you know, I'm hoping that, you know, the world will love and embrace these songs, because I think music evolves with time and we are part of that evolution.
You are listening to Womanity, Woman in Unity on Channel Africa, the voice of the African Renaissance, on frequency 9625 kilohertz on the 31 meter band. Also available on DSTV channel 902. We would love to receive your comments on Twitter at Womanity Talk. In today's program, we reflect on episodes of the past year with extracts of some of the most memorable shows. We begin the next segment with Professor Shlengiwe Mkhize, the Deputy Minister of the Department of Telecommunications and Postal Services, who emphasizes that there needs to be greater economic leadership and economic inclusion of women.
How do you see female leadership in South Africa? And do you think that we've done enough to help women achieve gender equality across all sectors?
I think women in South Africa in particular have always struggled side by side with men. But when I look back, there's this notion where people will say, this issue is not about gender. And sometimes it delays us. I remember when we were involved in struggles for liberation. Whenever you raised the gender issue, then men will say, you are dividing us. You are going to delay our liberation. And when I look back, there are gains which you could have made even then in terms of ensuring that there is a deeper understanding from all sides of equality between men and women. Because sometimes you can struggle together, and still men will think, in a patriarchal society, you mustn't assume that they think equality. They think you are there because something might be wrong with her, you know. Or maybe she's unhappy a bit at the moment. She hasn't got a boyfriend or something. They don't think equality automatically. So then each time you raise the gender equality issue, everybody will say, oh, no, you are delaying us. Here we're dismantling the apartheid system. That's a big issue. And so we lost time.
Because they're not mutually exclusive. You can do things at the same time. It's combating
the issues.
Yeah, because also it undermines your gains if you talk freedom and there are people who, for some reasons, are not liberated. So we are where we are. We've gained 50%, and we still have quite a number of women who bring up their children who live under tribal authorities. They've made their gains. Some of them own property, piece of land, but some still have serious challenges. But I think the private sector is lagging behind. If you look at statistics that was produced by the Johannesburg Stock Exchange.
Well, there's one with Businesswomen South Africa.
It was Businesswomen in South Africa.
Women on the JSE. And I think the last data was in 2012.
Yes.
Which indicates that we've only got 3.6% of CEOs on the JSE that are women.
Yeah. And you remember, women, if we assume that then we're 60% in the majority and you're so low in terms of economic leadership and inclusion, it shows what I'm saying, that we've made good gains on paper, but in some real life experiences, there are still challenges.
You're very right. Mm. And in one of the Labor Department studies, I saw that 80% of our female workforce are in low-skilled, underpaying positions.
Yeah, but people will actually capture them. In terms of statistics, they would say, oh, 45% of our women, although this is an area where people must have critical skills, are women. When you break that down and analyze it, you'll find that they'll be in the admin side or HR, you know.
Making up the numbers.
Yes.
As opposed to providing meaningful contribution to take their businesses ahead.
Being at the driving seat of the corporate strategy, because really that's what matters.
Next, we hear from Dr. Nkosasana Dlamini Zuma, chairperson of the African Union, who highlights the resilience and rise of African women succeeding in all spheres of life.
I think African women, because they are so resilient, because they are so, they have to do so much, they are also organized. And they've understood that there is power in numbers. And also they work within political parties. They also know that you need partnerships. You need to partner with those progressive men who will support you as women to get to those places. But also what helps a lot is that once women are there, even when people were doubting, they work very hard and they show that there's value for money in having women in parliament in those positions. And so the next time, it would be much easier. I remember when we first went to parliament, a lot of people were commenting, oh, what do these women know about parliament? But the same question you could have asked of men, because the black people were going to parliament for the first time, whether they were men or women. But their stereotype was, oh, these women, what will they know? But once the women were there, now that question doesn't arise anymore. And so, but also, you know, in 1906, Pixley Ka Isaiah Seme, who was a student at Columbia University in the U.S., won a medal for an essay that he wrote about Africa Rising, the Regeneration of Africa. I will give you a copy of that article.
Thank you.
Said something very interesting amongst many interesting things he said. He said that Africa will give birth to a unique civilization. And I think part of that uniqueness is the involvement of women. And I think as we send our kids to school, we will see more women in all areas of human endeavor. And that will set us apart, amongst other things, that will set us apart from the rest of the world, because we are putting a lot of emphasis on the women in all areas of human endeavor, not just in one. were doing much better in parliament, but as our economies grow, we're going to do better also in the economy, and we're going to do better in every area.
We'll take a short break.
Hi, this is Lira, South African Afro-soul singer and songwriter. You're listening to Womanity, Women in Unity, presented by Dr. Amalia Malka on Channel Africa, the voice of the African Renaissance, a program that celebrates prominent and ordinary African women's milestone achievements in their struggle for liberation, self-emancipation, human rights, and democracy.
You are listening to Womanity, Women in Unity on Channel Africa, the voice of the African Renaissance, on frequency 9625 kHz on the 31 meter band, also available on DSTV channel 902. We would love to receive your comments on Twitter at Womanity Talk. In today's program, we reflect on episodes of the past year with extracts of some of the most memorable shows. In the last segment of the show, we reflect on women in the business sector, starting with Ms. Nonkululeko Gobodo, the executive chairperson of Sizwe Insaluba Gobodo, who emphasizes that women bring unique attributes to the workplace and must be afforded the opportunity to carve a place for themselves.
I think that women are so talented, and they bring a different element in the workplace that the world is missing out, because we're not allowed to be ourselves. You know, you are only acceptable if you, you know, sort of play in the boys' club. If you don't play in the boys' club, you are seen to be weak. But we're different, and we bring a different flavor to the workplace. And we miss out on just allowing women to be themselves. But my view is that we don't have to wait for them to give us permission to be ourselves. We need to begin to carve that space where we can be ourselves in the workplace. Because I think when we do, they'll begin to see what they've been missing all along.
And do you think that that's one of the ways that women can benefit themselves in the future, of carving out that identity in the workplace, of bringing their whole selves into the workplace and playing their own role, their own character, as opposed to trying to be somebody else?
Which men don't have to. I mean, the job is tough enough. Can you imagine if we are starting, we are working very hard to fit into a role that has been sort of carved for you? Whereas men, they don't have to. You know, they just come in, they can't be themselves, and we sort of allow them to be themselves. And I think we need to demand to be allowed to be ourselves. But also, we don't have to wait for them. I think I've tried very much to be myself, and then you realize how sometimes people are so intimidated and overwhelmed by the largeness of your personality that you bring. And when they talk and or maybe complain about you, you realize that you are just being yourself. You're being natural, just like the next person is. But that, because they don't expect women to be. But we shouldn't stop. We shouldn't stop until they get used to the fact that we bring our whole selves.
We were talking about the need for women to take ownership. But sometimes having that desire, having that conviction isn't enough. Sometimes we need legislative support. And I raise that issue because South Africa's Women Empowerment and Gender Equality Bill is currently undergoing consultation and review. And its principal aim is about being able to promote equality for women across the board. As somebody who has sat on boards of listed companies as well as state-owned companies, what do you think about legislation in relation to be able to close some of the gaps that we've talked about, whether it is promotion, equal pay, position?
Again, we cannot wait for society to understand the need to promote women. And I support using legislation to sort of force the issue. And I hope that we will not have to do that for long. But unless those opportunities are created for women, I mean, if we have to sort of enforce that onto a society, then so be it, because I don't see men willingly opening those doors for women. And if governments do not, you know, take the responsibility to make sure that there's equal opportunity for everyone, equal pay for the same work, and all of those things, it is not going to happen. And women deserve their place in the sun also. And there's no reason why they should be struggling when men are just having it pretty, you know. So I support the fact that we need to have those quotas to make sure that we develop our own people. Because when we have more and more women in leadership, then it will be easier for them to open opportunities for others. So at that time, I suppose it won't be necessary to force issues. People don't like it.
It almost provides a snowball effect because you can see examples of successful women. You can appreciate the work that's gone into it. So you can see that they have the competence, and it opens more opportunities for other women.
Exactly. Exactly. That's why I'm saying it would be sad, though, that in 10 years' time, we still need to do that, you know, because at that time it would be glaringly obvious to everyone that it was necessary.
Next, Basila Bokoko, a pioneering business leader who focuses on establishing global alliance partnership for businesses looking to enter new international markets, considers how women juggle multiple complexities in their lives.
Now, you are undoubtedly a businesswoman. The working world, I find, is typically designed around what I term as man's hours, where we as a society are almost losing half of our best multitaskers from the workforce due to traditional expectations from women to have to reform and restructure their timetables plus their family needs. What is your perspective of this? Given all of the areas, the different countries that you've traveled to, what's your take?
Well, what I believe is that women, we are very hard on ourselves. We want to accomplish everything 100%. And we have all the superwoman complex that we should be perfect wives, perfect mothers, perfect daughters, perfect co-workers, perfect bosses. So we are really putting a lot of effort to manage balance in everything that we do. But I don't think the balance comes from making everything perfect. It just comes from making the best that you could. And I also believe that sometimes women, to match the expectations that men have, and because we are kind of traumatized by the fact that they will say, oh, I'm too emotional, or if I don't go to work because I have to take care of my kids, I don't look as professional as that, or I could not accomplish my goals. I think that we should definitely change that. And sometimes even women, we are harder with women, and really realize that what it makes us woman is exactly what is the beauty of what we have, and use it. Because I work in a very women environment. Actually, in my organization, I work with a lot of women. And I think that because I need that flexibility, I give them the flexibility. But the women, when we got this flexibility, we are very responsible in discipline to make things happen in our own time. Also, we are great multitaskers because our brain is designed to take different things at the same time. I work also with a lot of men, and in the world that I come from, all my board of directors were 40 men and me. And when I was presenting something, it was difficult because they would say, well, focus first in this, first in that. And it's difficult for them to focus in three or four things at the same time. But I believe that women, we should be nicer to us, ourselves, support each other. That's the reason why women organizations, associations, what Women Tea is doing, it's so helpful for other women to see other women that we also face problems and issues. And I mean, we all have to be human at the same time. It is not possible that you could do many things at the same time, but still you have to have your personal life together. Because I believe also that when any area of your life is falling apart, it also is going to affect your work. So we also have to take care of ourselves. Sometimes we forget that the first love of our life should be ourselves. And this is why women, we get in trouble, because if your parents are sick, you want to take care of them. You know, whatever people need, your friends, you're gonna go and help them. Your kids, your husbands. I mean, we want to, you know, all these worlds are open, and we want to try to be our best. But I think that when you're not okay, nobody around you is okay.
We have reached the end of the second part of our special compilation. Next week, we will continue reflecting on memorable moments from Womanity, Woman in Unity in 2015. I hope that you enjoyed the show as much as I enjoyed being with our guests. Until next time, enjoy the festive season. You have been listening to Womanity, Woman in Unity on Channel Africa, the voice of the African Renaissance, on frequency 9625 kHz on the 31-meter band, also available on DStv Channel 902.